Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, I have for you an interview with the CEO and founder of Netikus, Amar Kosher. You've heard me talk about the Netikus products in the past. Amar has emailed in a couple of times to say thank you, and I thought it was about time to get him on the show and talk a little bit about his products, how they've helped me, how I think that they can help you. So that will be the focus of our show today, an interview with Netikus. Just to give you a little bit of what's going to be coming up on our, I don't know if it's going to be the next show or the show after, but Mr. Matt Rainey gets his wish. We are going to be interviewing somebody from WatchGuard. You are not going to want to miss that show. I'm sure that Matt will be oh so giddy to be talking with somebody promoting his red box. We're also going to be having an interview with Cloudberry. Cloudberry is the number one cross-platform cloud backup software. We're going to be talking about that product specifically for IT service providers, so you're not going to want to miss that. Both of those are going to be shows coming up in the next few weeks. Be looking out for those. But first, before we get into tonight's interview, on behalf of my good friend Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show, I am going to tell a story. Now, let me qualify that. I did not say I was going to tell a great story, but a story. I'm going to try. Mike, a couple of weeks ago, when I had he and Mr. Cherubino on, he specifically asked me for more stories from the trenches. I told him I wasn't very good at that, and, well, let's just say I'm going to try now. That's why we bring on Mr. Matt Rainey. He's the true storytelling talent. But I do have something that I do want to review. It's a project that I just finished up today. It is fresh in my mind, so I wanted to go over it because I think there is not just a story, but one tip that I think we all can really grasp. And to give you a little bit of background, this is actually a referral, but it is not my typical referral. It is not a referral for someone to become my customer. It's a referral from a customer to another customer, because their in-house IT person was looking for help in doing a multi-site server migration from server 2003 to 2016. He's a very capable tech. He's been in the business quite a while, but just wasn't sure that he could handle this type of migration. So they reached out, and after an intense competition, I guess, where I knew that I was up against some other technicians, other MSP companies, they chose me and my company to assist with this project. So that's what I did just this past weekend. And of course, any type of migration or project, the one thing that I always do is like to do a site visit, come out, get all the information I can. Yes, I brought the Fluke, plugged it into their network, got all the information I could on servers and printers and network devices, and got a real good overview of their network. So as we're getting ready to do the migration over the weekend, one of the things that I ask about is, do we have all of the IP addresses that are statically assigned? Because as you know, anytime you do a new server, and specifically domain controllers, where we're making the domain controllers handle DHCP and DNS, we usually check for all the IP reservations. We check for anything statically assigned, which are usually going to be your printers, your switches, your key devices, things of that nature. But the tech said basically, nope, not much here. The only things that are statically assigned are servers. Everything else is DHCP. And from what I could tell, everything looked like it was DHCP, so no worries. With that, we continue on and do the migration. At every point in the migration, from Saturday night, copying the data, setting up the new servers, transferring the FISMO roles, and I'm not going to go back and explain all of this stuff, but migrating the services, upgrading the forest and the domain, all of that stuff, I'm checking along the way to make sure everything works, and it does. Verified with my Fluke, could plug in just about anywhere, get an IP, DHCP, DNS, out to the network, see other devices, everything worked. This project worked so well that we were done Saturday afternoon. Not only did we put up the two new domain controllers, we copied all the data from those servers, from the old servers to the new servers. We migrated all the services, and we decommissioned the old servers all from Friday night to Saturday afternoon. Pretty quick, pretty good. So, as usual, I reserve Monday as my follow-up day. Some of you call it aftercare. Some of you call it please don't call me day. But this was a day that I set aside specifically for them, that I would be on site in case there were any issues, although we didn't think that there was going to be any. So I show up. The first issue that comes up is they had a terminal server, which technically it was working. People could log in. People could do stuff. However, the login was taking a little bit longer than expected. 2 to 3 minutes, which for an end user is an eternity. So we knew right away what it could be. Could be DNS. And sure enough, it was. We had not gone into that server to change over the manual DNS entries from the old domain controllers to the new domain controllers. Did that. Everything was fixed, running fast, good to go. However, the next problem was that nobody could connect to their shares on their NAS drive. Now, the NAS drives, which there were two, one in each office, we had actually verified that they were set up DHCP as well. Please don't send me an email asking me why a NAS drive is set up DHCP. Not my network. I didn't worry about it. Everything worked. So we verify that, yes, it is getting an IP address. I pull out my network scanner. Other than my Fluke, I'm doing just a little quick network scan on the network. I can see the IP address. I can ping the IP address. Just cannot browse to the shares. I knew DNS was working because I could verify it with other workstations. I could verify it with my Fluke. IP addresses were registering valid. So, take a look in the DHCP just to make sure that we had set up everything properly in there, DNS, scope, all of that stuff. And what do I see? Bad address inside of DHCP. I see it in the one location, and I see it in the second location. Dozens of bad addresses. In my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we've either got some devices that are statically assigned, and other devices are trying to get that IP address. So we begin to exclude IP addresses, reboot devices, and yes, some of them would work. Some of them would not. And turns out, the little tip I'm going to give you today is one that we all know as trust but verify. You see, what had happened inside not only the NAS devices, but also on some of the workstations, was that yes, the IP address was set to be assigned by DHCP. However, in the DNS place, where usually there would be a box also set to obtain automatically, the DNS entries were actually manually set. So while the device would get an IP address dynamically, it was set statically to DNS. And so the tech had to go and manually uncheck all of those settings to put those to DHCP as well to get to the proper settings that they were supposed to have. Once that was done, everything worked. It was great. And it was just something where we had done all of our homework, or I thought we had done all of our homework. And even though I knew to ask, were there any static IP addresses on the network that we needed to address, didn't occur to me to think, hey, are there any statically assigned DNS entries that we need to check? So trust but verify. We did all the documentation. The tech had not touched the network in years, so for whatever reason, just didn't occur to him to go back and look at that and check that. I trusted him, but somehow we still should have checked. So a new line is going to be listed in my checklist, not just to check for static IP addresses, but to check for static DNS entries as well. So there you have it. A little discombobulated story and a tip. Trust but verify everything. All right, folks, we are going to take just a quick little break, and then we are going to come right back with my interview of Ingmar Kosher from Netikit.
If you need help selling and supporting Office 365, AppRiver can help. They've got the most experienced support team in the business. Call them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and speak to someone live here in the U.S. Try them free for 30 days by visiting appriver.com/podnutspro.
All right, everyone. Here we are back on Podnuts Pro, and with the interview that I have been talking about, we are going to be talking with Ingmar Kocher, the CEO and founder of Netikit. And if you've listened to the Podnuts Show Pro long enough, you will have heard me mention these products that are in the Netikit family. You've heard me talk about the Admin Assistant. You've heard me talk about Event Sentry. So Ingmar reached out to me, so many years ago, saying thanks for the shout out. And I thought, you know what? About time we brought him on the show. And here he is. So Ingmar, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, you know, I should probably start by saying that I thought my first introduction to Netikit was in 2009. But do you believe that I actually bought a product from you going back in 2004?
That's a long time ago.
Yes, it is. And it's a program now that you offer for free.
Yes, indeed. I'm very sorry about that. Yeah. But it's gotten better, though.
It's gotten better and it's gotten free. So that'd be great. All right. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. So why don't we go back and why don't you give us a nice formal introduction of who you are, how you got started in tech, all the good stuff about Netikit.
All right. So I got started. So I originally grew up in Austria and Europe, and I got started with tech pretty early on. And the beginning of my career, I was a systems administrator for a variety of companies over there. And always been interested in software development and started coding. You know, a couple of years down into my career, I started with Perl scripts and scripting languages and ended up progressing to C++. And as a system administrator, of course, I was always looking to build something that I would that'd be useful. So not much of a guy for theoretical things. I like to do practical things, things that have meaning and value. And so I started working on a very early version of Event Sentry. Back then it was called Event Watch NT, that essentially was monitoring event logs in real time. And that's pretty much, that was the first version of Event Sentry back in around, I want to say the year 2000, 2001.
Oh, so I found you guys pretty early.
Yeah, it's just about 3 years in, and yeah, you're a pioneer.
All right. So now you did this while you were a system admin. So, you know, were you monitoring, you know, a ton of servers and, you know, having issues like most of us have where, you know, we just weren't able to check the logs on a regular basis and things like that?
Yes, I mean, that was definitely one of the challenges that I had. The first challenge that even got me thinking about this whole event log monitoring was actually a physical issue. So we had servers in the Netherlands that were essentially in some, I don't want to say basement, it was some small, you know, office, satellite office. And there was just no way for anyone to keep an eye on that. And I wanted to know if something goes wrong with that machine, in particular hardware issues like a failed hard drive and array, things like that. And that was the first time I really thought about, okay, I've got to come up with something, you know, that will let me know when something goes wrong. And it kind of, and then, you know, once I had that going, I realized, okay, there's a lot more we can do with this and a lot more use cases.
All right. So one of the things that really got me on board that, and I'll do this ahead of the actual program introduction, but my first encounter we know was the auto administrator. But with the event century, the thing that really got me going was not just the real-time event log monitoring, but it was the fact that I could use it for compliance auditing. So I used it for HIPAA, where it could, you know, not only send me alerts of certain logs, but it keeps the history automatically inside the program. So that was a big thing that I liked, because all my other tools, it would just be sending me an email and then I would drag it into a folder, and that was my that was my my capturing of it there. But the events entry, you know, there's actually reporting built in and all of that stuff. So that was great.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a pretty popular component of the product.
The other thing that I liked about it is I have a couple of places where I have junior techs. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to know if somebody makes a change. You know, somebody deletes a user accidentally or moves somebody into the wrong group. So that has been an actual, you know, godsend in features when it comes to keeping tabs on what the other techs are doing.
Right. And it's not just, I mean, you bring up a great point, and it's not always just a change that's necessarily initiated by a user, right? Like, things change in a network all the time. You know, right. Maybe a new application that's being installed, disk space changing, you know, services stopping. And that's really where we're trying to, one of our core focus is to give you, you know, visibility and insight into what's happening on your network so you're aware of it. You know, without any sort of monitoring in place, you really have no idea if a user is being added, if a drive is being added, if a drive, you know, is empty or full, for that matter, if, you know, if a critical service stops, for example. And that's one of the problems, you know, that we're trying to solve, is to give you access to all that information that's essentially being generated constantly on the network.
All right. So Event Sentry, I guess you would call that the crown jewel of the product list here. So
yes.
In terms of describing to the listeners here exactly what that program is, you know, in, you know, some bullet points or feature list or stuff. So, I mean, we've talked about it only in the sense of being a log monitor, but what really is Event Sentry?
Well, Event Sentry log monitoring is certainly a central component and the main component of the product, probably. Reposition it right now as a hybrid SIM. So SIM as in, you know, event log monitoring. We use the word hybrid because it's more than that. Like I mentioned just earlier, we monitor a lot of components of Windows. So anything that's kind of what defined as system health, so disk space, services, performance monitoring, file checksum monitoring, FIM. We have an NTP component. It's extensible with custom scripts. So we just monitor, you know, we schedule tasks, we monitor running processes. So we monitor just about anything, you know, that's relevant on Windows on top of the log monitoring. But we monitor the event logs, we monitor log files like IIS log files, DHCP log files, all that kind of stuff that's useful for compliance, for example. So it's really a comprehensive solution to give you insight into the network, help you with compliance. But again, we want to go beyond the log monitoring, because log monitoring is great and you can get a lot of information from there. But there's some things that are just not going to be in the logs.
Right.
And that's where that's where that hybrid part comes in. That's where our product is a little different than some of the traditional, you know, log monitoring products on the market.
So you've got I mean, I'm looking at things like, you know, environment monitoring, so temperature, humidity, motion, smoke, water, all of that stuff. Now, I've not used any of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, is that really, I mean, for techs like me, you know, how do you branch out, you know, away from just the lodge to use those other features? Like, wasn't there a device monitoring for other network stuff?
Yeah, so we have network monitoring too. So the whole idea is we want to offer our customers one product that can do the majority of things that, you know, that the majority of our users need. So without having to purchase necessarily three or four different products, because we know what a burden it is to maintain them. You have to, you know, obviously you have to first of all purchase those products. You have to maintain the products. You have to configure the products. So we wanted to, you know, offer as much as possible for the most common things that, you know, that a user would need. So we did add some things like environment monitoring, for example. So if you want to monitor the temperature in a server room, we have a water sensor, humidity, all those things. And of course, we support SNMP-based devices too. So if you don't have to necessarily purchase you know, the hardware devices from us, so any sort of SNMP-enabled device, you can monitor with Event Century and integrate with alerts or into the reporting, for example.
Ah, SNMP. So printer monitoring?
Well, SNMP really works for any device that supports it, that firewalls, routers, switches. So any device that supports SNMP, like I mentioned, they're usually called managed devices.
Right.
We can monitor that. So you have to just obtain the MIB, configure the metrics that you want to monitor from this device. For example, the bandwidth, you know, on a firewall, for example, or the toner level on a printer. So you can do that as well. So those are things that you can do with Event Century as well. It's not the core feature of the product. It's not a focus.
Right.
But the functionality is there to, in most cases where you wouldn't have to go out and say, okay, now I need a network monitoring product on top of my log monitor.
Well, that would certainly make it easy to have everything in just one product. So I remember that I've looked at, so the way that your licensing work, you've got your full license that you would basically install on a server or a management workstation, and you can get as many licenses as you need. But then you also get your network device licenses.
Right.
So what's the difference in the licenses?
Well, we try to keep our licensing pretty simple. So we have two, like you just mentioned, those two types of licenses. So if you want to monitor a Windows-based device, whether that's a server or workstation, whether it's virtual or physical, it's all the same. You'll purchase a full host license, a full Windows license. If you want to monitor anything that's not running Windows, any IP, any network device with an IP address, essentially, that would qualify or fall into the network device category, and those are priced significantly lower than the Windows-based devices.
Okay. I can say this, folks. The licenses are, I don't want to say cheap, but I mean, they're affordable doesn't do it justice. It's priced very well, especially after the first year.
Yes. All of our licenses are perpetual, so we don't have subscription-based licensing at this point. So once you purchase a license, it's yours. You can use it as long as you'd like. And after the first year, like you mentioned, it's the annual maintenance is only 18%. And for that, you get another year of support, and you also get another year of updates. So any update we release, it doesn't matter if it's a minor or a major version update, it's going to be included. It's going to be free.
Now, updates. It seems like you guys are doing updates all the time.
Well, we try. I mean, I appreciate you saying that. We do have a pretty frequent cycle, especially when it comes to bug fixes and patches. So we do usually release something about once a month or so. So we're pretty agile when it comes to identifying problems or fixing problems that our customers have identified. So you usually see an update once a month. And major releases, yeah, we try to come up with at least one a year. Lately, we've had a little bit more than that. So every 8 to 10 months or so, but you can pretty much expect to have, you know, one major update released a year. And patches are always going to be free. So even if your maintenance is expired, if there's a patch to the version that you purchased, it will always be free because, you know, you've already paid for the product and you're essentially, in our opinion, you know, entitled to have a working version of that product. So even if your maintenance is expired and we release a patch, you'll be eligible to install that.
All right, folks, we are talking to Ingmar Kutcher, the CEO of Netekis, and we're just doing we just finished a nice quick rundown of Event Century, the program that I've been touting for a while as a great log monitor, a program that I've been using more and more to do compliance for me, and to monitor my junior techs. But you've got some other nice programs out there, and I mentioned the one earlier. It's not called Auto Administrator anymore. It's called Admin Assistant.
Yes, so we have two additional products. So Event Century is our only commercial product that we sell right now. All of our other products are free. Auto Administrator is now called the Event Century Admin Assistant. So we pretty much, you know, for branding purposes, brought all of these little tools that we had and other, you know, auxiliary products under the Event Century brand. The Event Century Admin Assistant is essentially, it's a free tool. It integrates with Active Directory, and it lets you apply or query actions across multiple computers, essentially in batch mode or in parallel. So a good example would be you wanted to query the server, a particular service on 10 of your servers. So instead of having to manually go to those servers or writing a PowerShell script or doing it from the command line, you just fire up the admin assistant, select the service you want to query, check the hosts or the OU in Active Directory, hit start, and using multiple threads, the admin assistant will go out there and show you the status of each service. And there's multiple features in there. You can query registry keys, so that's or change them for that matter too. So if there's, you know, some sort of a vulnerability and you need to lock something down, you need to add a value to a bunch of computers at the same time, you don't want to mess with that GPO right now, you just need it done, just fire up admin assistant, set the key, the value, hit go, and it will do it for you. And it does this for WMI queries. You can copy files. You can even execute processes remotely. So most of you are probably familiar with the sysinternals, BSXEC tools. So we have our own version built into the admin assistant. So if you wanted to run some command on 50 workstations just right now and there, let's say you wanted to manually install something, you know, an unattended installer or something, then you can do that. So Event Century will go out there, install this temporary service, start the process remotely, and essentially do exactly what PSXEC does, except it can do it on any number of machines with a couple of clicks with the mouse.
I love this program. And,
I'm glad.
You know, the fact that I paid for it so many years ago, I will say this, and we say this all the time to our listeners, that if a product is good, pay for it and keep it around. And I mean, obviously it stayed around, but I mean, I've used this program. Let's just say if you use it to reset passwords alone.
Yes, you can do that too.
It saves time because, for instance, setting a local user password, you know, on a domain is actually, I mean, it's almost point and click.
Right. You just select the username, the password, and select your computers and hit go.
And you can verify passwords. I mean, that is key there. So if you've, you know, deployed 100 stations, but you don't know if you have all the same admin passwords on them, you can hit verify with the password that it's supposed to be and find out if it's that right password. And then obviously you can go back and change it if it's wrong.
Yes.
So that and the file management feature, you mentioned copying files.
Right.
That has been also one of the better part of the programs, where not only can I push out an entire directory to as many machines as I want, I can also go through and empty those directories.
Yeah, I believe you can do that.
You want to know how I figured that out? I had a support tools directory that I would put on workstations, and I had a customer that I left a while back, And I had 185 workstations that I did not want those tools left on those computers. Okay. I didn't want to have to go and manually log into each computer to do that. So I played around with I still have it as an auto administrator. I haven't even updated it. So I went in, selected all the stations, and toyed through the delete files. You just add the folder and hit delete, and it goes through and cleans it out.
Oh, wow. That's good. Yeah. I wasn't actually aware that you could do that, but yeah, it sounds like I'm glad that worked for you.
It just chipped me off 10% for the next sale so I can advertise for you. And then, of course, it's got the regular shutdown reboot as well, and then the services that you mentioned. So that is a great product. So you mentioned Thank there you. Were two. What was the what's the third product?
So the other product we have are called the Event Sentry Sysadmin Tools. They used to be called the NT Toolkit. So this is something that we started back in the days when Windows NT was still prevalent. But, you know, of course, that's not used so much anymore, the term Windows NT. So we wanted to kind of move away from that. And again, we brought it under the Event Sentry umbrella. So that's, again, a free tool set. It's mostly command line tools. It's about 30 of them. And more often than not, they're spin-offs of something that we put into Event Sentry. So, you know, as we code and add new features to Event Sentry, you know, we can sometimes, you know, take those components out and just put them in a little standalone tool to provide you the user with something useful. Again, those are usually things that you could probably do with other products or other suites or PowerShell, but they're just really easy to use. And my favorite parts of that is we have a ping replacement. It's called FPing. That's infinitely faster than the Windows built-in ping. It supports sounds, which may sound a little silly, but it's real nice to bring the ping up in a command prompt, and you're waiting for a server to come up, and it starts, you know, binging once the server is back up. So you don't even have to look. It'll just go tick, 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 and you know, okay, the server's back up.
I will say that is fantastic, because there have been times where, yeah, I'll open up a station and ping and start doing something else and forget.
Yes,
that I've got that ping going. So yes. Having that noise is great.
And you can also check TCP ports. So you can just, if you ping a host, you can just essentially append a colon and then type in the port number. And then it will basically work as a port scanner, essentially. So if you want to check your SMTP port or NetBIOS port or whatever, you know, or RDP port, you know, then you can just say, you know, fping IP address colon 3389, and then you'll check if that RDP port is open, for example. And it's also smart enough to recognize the IP address on your own network. So if your network range, for example, is 192.168, let's say 1.1, and you want to ping your firewall, then you can literally just type fping 1. And if it's in the same network that your workstation is on, it will automatically recognize, okay, this is not a full IP address. And it's going to prepend based on your subnet mask, your network component of it. So if you just type in fping 1, it will ping 192.168.1.1 for you automatically.
Oh, didn't know that.
So yeah, it's in the documentation, you know. RTFM.
Yeah.
I'm not going to vouch on that. It should be in the documentation.
RTFM is fine. My listeners understand that.
And my other favorite tool that I probably use most often is called IPMon Plus. And that's essentially a network capture tool with a GUI. It uses the WinPCAP driver just like Wireshark does. And it's not a replacement for Wireshark. But what it does is it gives you all the incoming, outgoing traffic from your machine based on the protocol and the port and the amount of data and packets that are being sent and received. So it's great for troubleshooting. You know, more often than not, you know, you're in a situation where you're trying to get connectivity with something. You don't know, is it being blocked or not? Is it coming in? How much data is, you know, going in or out? Then you just fire up the tool. It'll install WinPCAP for you if you don't already have it. And within, you know, a few seconds, you'll see exactly which IP address is talking with which IP address. Usually, you know, one of them is going to be your local machine. You know, is it TCP? Is it UDP? Which port is it? How many bytes have been transferred and how many packets have been sent? So we use it for troubleshooting very often, you know, because if you have users who are trying to send syslog, for example, you know, to Event Century and it's not coming in, and we want to know, okay, where is the problem? Is it not sending? Is it being blocked somewhere? And Wireshark is great, you know, if you want to go into the packet level and if you want to see all those nitty-gritty details from a packet. But it can sometimes be a little overwhelming if you just want to know, okay, is this one host sending me something or not? In this case, that PMON is really neat because you just fire it up and you have it right at a glance.
Oh, all right. I'll have to get looking at that one. That one I have not played with.
Oh, it's about time.
So FPing and MX Query is one that I like a lot.
Okay, MX
in
Query,
there.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, and the Wake on LAN. I'll use that sometimes.
Yes, that's a good one too. And DataHog is another one that's kind of nice. It's a little newer. I forgot about that. That will show you the largest directories.
Get out.
On a drive in on the command line. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with similar tools like WinDirStat and some of the other ones that are out there. Again, it's not designed to be a replacement for them because, you know, they're much more detailed. But if you're in a bind and you don't want to necessarily install WinDirStat, or you just want to really know, okay, well, what's my biggest offender on that drive? If you just run that utility, it shows you the top.
I see here that it says logical drive or directory path. So am I reading that right? Can I tell what the largest directories are on a network share or on a remote computer by UNC path?
Yeah. As long as it's accessible, it wouldn't matter if it's a local drive or remote drive.
Oh, that's got to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, it uses its own algorithm to find, because it's not that easy to really find what's really the largest folder, because technically just the root of the drive is the largest folder, of course. So it tries to kind of figure out, okay, you know, what's the largest folder that's going to be relevant that stores the most files. So, yeah.
Nice. I've got a customer that they don't want to get, well, either a new server or upgrade the hard drives in their server to get more space. So we always have to try to figure out what are the largest old directories that we can, you know, archive off to onto another space. But it's something where I can't do it from my admin station. I literally have to log on to the server with one of those programs, because most of them cannot do a scan to a network drive. So if this does it from a network drive or, you know, across the network share, you know, just save me time from having to, you know, log into a server just to run a program.
Yeah, no, that should definitely work. And that's a perfect example of a spin-off, because in Event Century, we have a feature that enumerates the 250 largest files automatically. I mean, you can turn that off, of course, if you don't want it, but it's done by default. And we basically put that into a little utility too. So if you're running Event Century, you automatically have a web page where you can go and you can say, okay, on server ABC13, you know, show me the 250 largest files.
Oh, RTFM. I haven't looked at that either. there is a lot. I will say there is a ton of stuff in these programs. So, you could spend, I mean, months actually going through some of these things in here.
Yeah. It's free. There's no registration required. You literally just click on the download button. It downloads. So we don't collect any email addresses or anything like that. They're all lightweight tools. The whole thing, I think, is only a few megabytes. And they also don't have any sort of dependencies that some of the other tools have out there. So there's no .NET requirement or Java or anything like that. So it's really just, you can copy that. I think IPMon is the only one, since it's a GUI application. It has a couple of DLLs that are included from Qt, but anything else, you really just take the .exe, copy it over, and it will run.
All right. So that is a good bridge into something I wanted to ask you about. It's not on our outline. But I found a neat little page on your website, our sysadmin promise. where that is, I mean, a credo as to how companies should be, where it lists, you know, simple pricing.
Yes.
Support the way it should be, always up to date, and free tools. And you actually hit the nail on the head by saying no sign up required. You know how many tools I have went to go look at, and because they asked for not only my email address, my company name, my address, my phone number, you know, how many kids do you have? And
yeah.
I'm like, I'm not signing up if you're going to ask for all that stuff.
So, I couldn't agree more.
So I love that. So your sysadmin promise, who came up with that little concept?
Well, I did. And that's because most of us, I mean, like I said, you know, I was a sysadmin myself, and I still, you know, every once in a while have to administer or help administer systems. And a lot of the of employees, everybody in support, you know, was a sysadmin. So we, you know, we get where you're coming from, and we understand, you know, things not just from a business or software developer perspective, but also from the perspective of a sysadmin, because either we were, because all of us, well, most of us, not all of us, but most of us were in that field, and we know how frustrating it can be. And we don't really think there's a reason to get all that information. We're not going to just, like some of our competitors do, you know, they're really just trying to bait you. You know, they give you those tools because they hope that you eventually come and purchase a product, but they aggressively will try to get your business. And of course, we want you to take a look at Event Century too. I mean, obviously, there's a reason for that, but we're not going to force you to that. I mean, we want you to see the value and decide on your own that you want to take a look.
Well, I will attest to the fact that I have loved the fact that you guys haven't been aggressive, but I have also loved the fact that you created a good product from the start. I mean, like Thank you. Said, I didn't realize how long I had been using it and how close it was to you guys getting started. And, you know, that's a testament because a lot of companies don't really last this long.
Yes, yes. That's a very good point. Yeah, no, things are going well, and we love what we're doing. So,
all right. So here's my question. How long after you started Natikas were you able to leave your other job?
Well, it was a side project for a while. So I want to say it took me about a couple of years or so, around a year or so of doing this on the side. My last job and my first job here in the U.S. was more or less, I want to say, what you describe as a cush job. You know, it wasn't that demanding. So I was busy, but I had some extra time, and I used that time to essentially, you know, work on the tool, especially on the weekends and in the evenings. And back then, you know, I was still a lot younger, and I had just moved to the U.S. So I didn't have really a whole lot of friends, so I used that time to basically build the groundwork.
All right, and you're based out of Chicago.
Yes.
All right.
The Windy City.
Yep. We are going to be there. And when I say we, a lot of the listeners will be attending a conference up there called the IT Owners Compass at the end of August. So we will have to remember to reach out to you. The conference is full. Sorry. Can't get you in.
Okay. Of course.
but if I get the schedule and find some time, we'll have to do a little meetup there and say hello in person.
I would love that.
And so I had another question I was going to ask you. I remember when I was doing my research on you. So you're a runner.
How do you conduct your research?
I got a staff of we scour the internet looking for stuff. So I saw that you were a runner and that you have an enjoyment of coffee houses.
So when I'm not working and when I'm not with the family, and it's not freezing cold outside, I do enjoy running. I had a bit of a meniscus surgery, so I'm not going to be doing those long runs, still enjoy running, and I generally enjoy staying fit and in shape.
So when you say the long runs, are we talking marathon type runs?
Yeah, so, well, half marathon. So I never technically did a marathon. I did something similar, which was actually longer, but that was just a one-time occurrence. So generally, you know, I try to stick to those like 6 to 10 mile runs, but with my latest adaptations to my knee, I'm going to have to keep this a little bit on the shorter side, somewhere on the 5-6 miles.
All right.
The doctor does not like me running.
If it takes a doctor to stop you, I think it's time to stop.
Yeah, it's that's not going to happen.
Well, I can tell you this. I stopped playing basketball, and I did not need a doctor to tell me.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more risk of injury, I guess, but surprise injury, right? With running, it's usually something that happens over time where something just wears out, right?
Right, yeah. Running, you don't really ever risk getting poked in the eye or...
Right.
or knee in the chest or something.
Right, or go in with a good Achilles and leave with a...
Yeah, that's...
You know, a torn, you know, Achilles, you know, yep. Whatever, so...
All right. Well, Amar, I want to say thank you for coming on the show. I really want to say thank you for having such a great product that I have been talking about on the show and has, I don't want to say it saved my bacon, but it has done me very well in my business to be using your tools. And I want to thank you for that.
Okay. So you don't want to offend the vegetarians that are listening, right?
Listen, I am an equal opportunity offender, so.
No, I'm glad it helped you and that you see value in it. And I'm hoping, well, I don't want to say I want to hope it saves your bacon, because that would mean that you are going to have a problem. But
right.
Those are usually just a matter of time anyway. There's one thing I forgot to mention, if you don't mind me.
Sure, go right ahead.
Because we talked about the two products that we offer in addition to Event Century, but one thing that is completely obvious and I forgot to mention is we also have a free version of Event Century. That's called Event Century Lite.
Oh, yeah.
So Event Century Lite is similar to Event Century. It doesn't have the web-based reporting, so you're not going to be able to use it to, you know, dig through logs that you've collected over time and that sort of thing. And it's limited to... a small number of hosts, so it's more like intended for like really small IT shops, you know, where you have like one server or two servers that you want to monitor and a firewall. But that tool is completely free, and what it does is it'll allow you to get alerts when there are issues. So whether that's, you know, disk space alerts or, you know, failed logons, or even if it's a domain controller, you can get emails when, you know, a user is added or removed, and that's completely free as well. Again, there's no sign up form. You just download it, run it, and it's pretty popular too because it's just really plain and uncomplicated and gives you immediate, you know, assurance that you'll know when something obviously goes wrong. Obvious goes wrong.
Right. All right. So that is over now. I'm going to try to put this properly in the show notes because the main homepage is natikas.net, but it seems as though everything really goes to eventcentury.com, right?
Yeah, so Natikas is the legal name of the company, but over the last 3 years, we've moved, almost all of the content to eventcentury.com.
Okay.
So don't bother remembering Natikas.net. You can just go to eventcentury.com, and that's pretty much where you'll find everything.
Okay. All right. And then, yeah, just simply go to the downloads page, and you'll see the products there. And there's the full trial of the full Event Century, the free Lite edition, along with the other free tools, the Admin Assistant and the SysAdmin tools. So great, great stuff there. And so is there any place else that we can steer our listeners to if they want to ask questions, if they want to just simply contact support, they just go to the website, or do you have a Facebook or anything like that you want to pimp?
Yeah, we're present, you know, in all the main social media outlets, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google Plus, YouTube. We have a number of screencasts there. If you want to get in touch with us, the easiest way, honestly, is to just go to the eventcentury.com website, click on the support link, and click on request support. So there's a short form there. In the footer on the bottom of our website, there's also two email addresses, sales@natikas.net and support at medicus.net. So that's where you can get support for the product. And we also have a Q&A forum under the support section. So if you feel like your question could be relevant to others, if it's a question about functionality in the product, then the question and answer would probably be a good spot for that.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. All the particulars, much better than I would have said it, but we'll have all of that in the show notes there. And again, Ingmar, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show and talk about this. And I will see if I can't steer some listeners over and have them start purchasing Event Sentry, because it's a great tool.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and it was a pleasure.
All right. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We have just finished up the interview with Ingmar Kocher from Netticus, the CEO and founder. And I will be back right after this to end off the show. Well, folks, that is going to do it for this episode of Podnuts Pro. I would like to thank my special guest, Ingmar Kocher from Netticus. And yes, folks, you heard me pronounce that two different ways tonight. And I will have to let you know that I apologize to Mr. Kocher for pronouncing his company incorrectly for, these many years. The correct pronunciation is Netticus. Netticus, netticus.net is where you want to go, folks. That will be in the show notes. And if you head over to podnuts.com, you will be able to see all of the show notes. And folks, you'll be able to see all the other great shows here on the Podnuts Network. Please take a listen to those and support them any way you can. I do, as always, want to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me directly at marvin@podnuts.com. You can also do the Twitter thing and send me a message at podnutspro, which is the Twitter handle. You can send us questions, tips, show suggestions, anything you want there, folks. And just as a point of reference, I saw an email come in from Danny just a little bit ago. Danny, we will get to your email on one of the upcoming shows. Just want to let you know that we got it and show all of our listeners that, yes, we do get email. Again, folks, head over to podnuts.com and support the other great shows, support our affiliates, support us by doing Patreon, whatever way you wish to keep these great podcasts coming. And remember, we'll be coming up in the next couple of weeks with interviews with WatchGuard, Cloudberry, and some other great stuff. So be looking to... I guess I can't say looking to see you, but guess you'll be looking to hear from us real soon. So until then, holla.